Oh, good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
My name is Cindy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cindy.
My sobriety date is February 16th, 2014. And the Breakfast Club is my home group, so I feel at home here. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and we've gone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I guess I'll start from the beginning. I was born in Florida, raised in Georgia, and I grew up in a household that was full of chaos. So by the time I was 13, I was almost a daily drinker. It was every chance I could get. By the time I was 16, I was a blackout drinker. And by the time I was 17, I dropped out of high school, already been to jail, all those good fun things that go along with the problems of alcohol. And I couldn't see it at the time. You know, I thought I was having a good time. I thought it was all fun and games. I didn't see the seriousness of the path I was heading down. And I didn't realize how much trouble I was really in until I lost my son. It was Thanksgiving Day. I was having that self-pity party because nobody had called me to tell me how much they loved me, so I was going to call them and tell them how much I didn't love them. And I was already wasted. I called my sister to tell her that I think that she needs to appreciate me a little bit more. And at that time, I kind of realized I did not know where my son was. He was only 2 years old at the time. And so in my stupor, I was walking around outside trying to find him. And on the phone with my sister, and of course, she's in North Carolina. I'm here in Georgia, and she had nothing else to do. She didn't know what to do. So she called the local Cherokee County Police. They came over to my house. They realized I was intoxicated and couldn't take care of my son. So this is God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, asked me to call somebody to come watch after him. So I called the only person I knew at the time who would be willing to come help me, and that was my estranged boyfriend. We had already sort of gone our own little ways, but I had no one else to call. I'd already chased away everybody in my life. And so he came over to help, and of course, as soon as the police left, I went right back to what I was doing, and he didn't know what else to do, so then he calls the police because here I was going right back into my bottle. When the police came out the second time, they said, we have to do something. You have two choices. You can either go to jail or you can go to the hospital. Either way, we need to call somebody for your son because he wasn't going to, my estranged boyfriend at the time, he wasn't going to stay around. He said, this isn't mine. You know, I'm washing my hands of this. So I was able to call my mother. And of course, again, growing up in that house of chaos, for the state of Georgia to tell me my mother was a better mom than me, I was like, wait a second. So I decided to go to the hospital. I had to sign my rights over to my mother. I signed my rights over to my son. And the next day, I figured I needed to reevaluate my life, and I tried getting into a rehab, and my insurance wouldn't pay for it. So they suggested I come here. So it was November 2011. I walked through these doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it changed my life. Really did. At first, it was one of those things where I thought that AA was going to teach me how to not get in trouble, not suffer the consequences of alcohol. So I did the hokey pokey thing for a while. I was in and out and in and out. Geographical changes, running away from my problems instead of facing them facing them. And it was just this endless cycle. Every time I went back out, it got worse. I would think, this time I've got it beat. This time I will do it right. But it would only get worse. I'd go back to jail and think, okay, well, this time I mean it. This time I'm definitely quitting for good. And it wasn't until I came back to Georgia after many, many geographical changes and thought that I didn't, you know, I'm good this time. Now, that estranged boyfriend, he went to Korea know, because they weren't sending tickets to the moon. He literally went to the other side of the world to get away from me after that. And we had repaired a few things. Of course, I had been lying through my teeth saying that I was sober. And so he decided to give me another chance. And, I mean, all the way up until the day he came to North Carolina to pick me up, I was still drinking. In my insanity, I, you know, realized that, oh gosh, I have to pick him up from the airport. What am I going to do with all this evidence? And not even thinking the fact that it was Sunday and all the dumps were closed, I'm driving around the airport trying to find a place where I can dump all the garbage and finally find an apartment complex where I could dump it into the dumpster there. And picked him up from the airport, and we came to. He helped me pack everything up, and we moved back to Georgia. And I thought this time, this is how I'm going to do it. You know, I have a babysitter, is what it was. And I thought that I'm not going to be able to drink because he will know, and he'll run away again. And I don't want to do that. I really love this man. But after about 45 days or so, I thought I can go out one night. It was one night that he had gone out with his friends, and he's not one of us, so, you know, he can go out and have fun and be responsible and come home and not have, you know, the cops bringing him home or have to go pick him up from the hospital or, you know, have to go bail him out of a situation. So I was thinking I could go out and have one, and I'll be okay. He'll never know. And nope, I couldn't, because I am an alcoholic. I can't just have one. I blacked out, as I always do. And I woke up in the hospital at Northside Hospital. And by God's grace, the first thing I saw was his face. And now to rewind just a little bit, I did get custody of my son again. And that poor child had to see way more than he should have. And, you know, whenever I'm feeling froggy, it's funny how God works, because he will remind me of things that he witnessed. Mommy, remember that time that you hit that car and you took off? Yeah. You do? Yeah. Okay. Or, you know, he'll say, Mommy, I love you so much. I'm so glad you're here today. You know, those little reminders that this program does work when you work it. So back to Northside Hospital, when I wake up after that, and this is February 16th, I woke up in the hospital. And, of course, the nurse asked me, have you ever heard of AA? I'm like, yeah, once or twice. My boss had been present to my last drink. They thought I was dead, because I was. They called the police to pick me up from the bar, because, of course, I was acting crazy. By the time the police got there, I was out on the ground, not moving, not breathing. They called the ambulance. The ambulance came to pick me up, and they were able to resuscitate me. But the first thought was, how could I let this happen to me again? How could I let this happen? And it was because I have no control over my alcohol, over drinking once I've taken a drink. I have no control over how much I consume. I have no control over my actions. I have no control over my life. It is completely unmanageable once I've taken that first drink. And it took dying to realize that. You know, I was going to leave my son, leave the man I love, leave this life, this gift that God has given me, all for a drink. And so I truly humbled myself. I truly admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable. I came into these rooms and I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I mean, me of all people. And I gave my will and my life over to the care of God, and it's been a gift ever since. Yeah, I worked with my sponsor and we made a list of all those people I was pissed off at. And, of course, I'm hoping she's going to be like, yeah, you're justified. No, she made me look at where I played a part. And, you know, I was able to open up to her and to have a caring ear that didn't judge me, arms to wrap around me and console me. was something I'd never really experienced before. You know, being able to tell somebody all that crap that I did, all those things that I swore I'd take to my grave, because if you knew what I had done, you wouldn't love me. And she did anyway, unconditionally, because that's what we do in this program. We know where we come from because we've been there. And we love each other regardless. We love each other because we know who we will become by working the steps of this program. And so, after realizing my part in everything and realizing that, you know, I had a few character defects here and there, yeah, I asked God to humbly remove them. And it's so funny because every single time I think I have a character defect under control, another one pops up. And I realize, oh wait, I got more to work on than I realized. And then that's why I'm grateful that this is a lifelong learning process. This is a lifelong program. This is a way of living because it gives me the chance every day to make a little bit better, a little bit more progress. So by asking God to humbly remove my character defects, it allows me to open my mind up for new ideas, a new way of living. It allows me to be of service to others, to help others to get out of myself, to realize that I am not the end all and the begin all, that there is a whole world out there full of people who need my help. But there are also a lot of people that I had harmed. And I had to be willing to make amends to those people and let them know that I'm sorry that I used them, that I'm sorry I abused them, that I'm sorry I neglected them. And be willing to do what they needed me to do to make it right. Whew, okay. And then I had to realize that I don't have all the answers. And that is why I'm allowed to learn each day as far as coming to meetings, hearing your stories, hearing how you're handling life. And there's not a single thing that I've gone through or that I'm going through that someone here hasn't already been through. That I can go to someone and ask, how do I get through this test? You know, what's the next step I need to take? I just went through something that I thought I would never go through. And it's a good experience. After coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I decided to go back to school. I decided that at 30 years old, I need to grow up. And so I went back to school and I thought, okay, I had my career idea in mind. This is where I'm going to go. And yeah, I'm trudging through the happy road of destiny and thinking, okay, this is where God wants me. But of course, it's God's will, not mine. So wherever he decides I need to be, that's where I'll be. And of course, when I got my answer, I didn't like it. And I was able to come to these rooms and have somebody, you know, just let me cry it out. and let me know that it's going to be okay, you know, and get to the next thing. You know, anytime I have difficulties in raising my son now, because now I'm a sober mom and dealing with life on life's terms, and I have my child to raise. And there are good days, and there are some rough days, and I'm able to go to other mothers in this program and see, how are you raising your children? You know, lead me, you know, help, give me some advice, and they're able to at least say what they did in these particular situations, or doctors that they may have taken their children to, or, you know, just, you know, fun ideas to do with him, because I never did that before. You know, I would drink and I would ignore him and I would close the door and say, don't bother me. Here, have a cookie. Leave me alone. And now I get to be the mom who says, no, you're going to eat your vegetables. So, it makes me so grateful to be here today because I do have that opportunity to learn and grow and break that cycle and give my son the childhood that I never had, to be that mom that I want to be. And then, you know, be that student I want to be the employee that I want to be, and do right by others. So now I get to wake up every day, and I kind of start my day by asking God what His will is. I'm able to listen. I was taught that praying is talking to God and meditating is listening. So by listening to His will, it's able to calm my mind. And, you know, oddly enough, I used to think, I hated being told what to do. You know, you tell me what to do, I'm going to do the opposite. But it's such a weight lift off my shoulders when I can allow God to do His will, because then I don't have to think so much. I am able to gracefully go through the day, hopefully, you know, as long as I'm staying spiritually fit, because there are days that I do take that will back and I will sit there and say, no, I think I have a better idea. You know, I'm the person that argues with my GPS. My GPS will say, take a left. I'm like, no, I know if I keep going down 3 more exits and take a right, I'll be fine. And then I get lost and it takes me 20 extra minutes to get where I'm going. So if I can just follow that good orderly direction, which I'm learning to do better and better every day. And, you know, and now it's so weird because I look back at my life and I realize that where I was, who I thought I was, who I thought I wanted to be, I was just a lost soul. I was just a lost soul. And I can't believe that my life is what it is today, you know. I have genuine friends, not just friends that I go out with to party or hang out or use and abuse or, you know, get together with because we have a common purpose of using and drinking. Today I have friends who, again, we rely on each other to get through our daily problems. We rely on each other for laughs. We rely on each other for cries. And it's such a beautiful life today. The first 164 pages of the Big Book, I've been taught, is a text. It is how to recognize who I am and what I am. It's a design for living, which will teach me how to become somebody else, the person I can be, the best Cindy. Because that's all it's about. I can't expect to be anyone else but me. And my problems today are first class. After that little bout at school where I figured I didn't get into the program I wanted, and I'm learning want is a four-letter word for me. I need to just take it out of my vocabulary. Because I'm going to be where I need to be. And I'm learning the more I trust God, the more I allow Him to run the show, the happier I am. It's really funny how that works. And so the same day that I received that letter of thanks but no thanks, and I came here and I cried it out and I felt better knowing that I will be okay. It'll be okay. I was accepted into another program that's led me to is leading me into an industry where I will be of maximum service to others. Which, you know, if I was really listening, is where God wants me to be. He wants me to be able to help others. And so I was able to complete that program at school with honors. I actually had the highest GPA in my class, and I couldn't have done that if I was drinking. There's no way. I was the kid who dropped out of high school. I was the kid who didn't need the education because I knew everything already. And so, you know, to complete that program, and I will be graduating, I actually graduate in December, but I will be walking in June. It'll be the first time that I have received a degree, a diploma, or anything other than a GED. And that accomplishment is only by the grace of God and by working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because without it, I don't know where I'd be right now. I don't know where my son would be right now. And going back to that estranged boyfriend, God, He's loved me through thick and thin. He's been there for better, for worse, for sickness and in health, and we will be getting married in June. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, He loved me when nobody else could. And even when He felt like He couldn't, y'all did. Y'all taught me that I was worthy of love. And for that, I am extremely grateful. And Karen's right. I don't share a whole lot. I believe in the short and sweet, and I'm looking at the time, and I'm like, okay, where to next? I was afraid. But, and I know I'm kind of jumping around a whole lot. But when I was a kid, I did not know who I was. I did not know, I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't feel like I was one of those kids who, whatever you liked, I liked. Whatever you didn't like, I didn't like, just to feel accepted. And now I feel accepted being me. I'm praying that God will speak through me and nothing's coming through. So. But I am learning that courage, you know, this, and just so you know, I'm terrified up here right now. So, but courage is not the absence of fear. It is the ability to walk through fear with God. So, yes, Mary?
How did you gain willingness?
The gift of desperation. I had nowhere to turn. I felt like, for me, at this point, finally, to drink was to die. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 2011. I was in and out, in and out. I'd get a few days and think that, okay, well, I've got it licked now. I can go back out and have that one. And again, it was never just one. And, you know, then, of course, nothing ruins your drinking like a head full of AA. So I would have that drink and figure, well, I've already messed up my sobriety date. Might as well go all the way. And every single time I went out, it got worse. And then I'd find that gift of desperation again. And I'd come back in and go, this time, for real, I mean it. I'm never going to have another drink. Oh, wait a second. And I think to myself, well, if I'm never, ever, ever going to drink again, if I'm going to go the rest of my life without drinking, let's go back out for one more time. And that it terrified me. It truly did. It terrified me to think that I would go the rest of my life without a drink. But the people in AA taught me that it's not about going the rest of my life without a drink. It's just about going through today without a drink. All I had to do was go 24 hours. And when I couldn't do that, all I had to do was go through 1 hour. And when I couldn't do that, all I had to do was go through 1 minute. And there were a lot of days where that 1 minute felt like a whole day. But as long as I could get to that next minute, I get to the next minute, then it would turn into 5 minutes. Okay, if I can just go 5 more minutes. All right, if I can just go 1 day. Finally, 1 day. Now, before I ever came into AA, and my mother, again, of all people, asked me once, can you just go 1 day without a drink? And I remember looking at her and I said, I'm not going to make a promise I can't keep, because that idea terrified me. You know, again, at 16, I was a blackout drinker. And after that, I was a daily drinker. I could not go a day without drinking. I also worked in the restaurant industry, so it was really easy for me. You know, I was constantly surrounded by it. You know, it was so easy for me to just say, hey, look at that big elephant over there, and then pour myself a big drink, and that was it. So usually by the time I got off from work, I was plastered. You know, and then of course when I'm asked, when I wreck my car into the guardrail, were you drinking? No. No, maybe one. Of course it was all, yeah. So, I was, at the time I finally came into AA, I was an around the clock drinker. So, you know, again, to go one day without a drink, not me. And, finally I did put a few days together. I would get a couple of weeks together. And I remember when I would get past my last, okay, how do I word this? Say for instance, when I first came in, I would get 12 days. For some reason, 12 days was this magical number for me that I thought, after 12 days, I'm cured. And so when I would go back out, I'd be like, well, okay, just one night and I'll start over again tomorrow. I remember the first time I got to 13 days. And I was like, wow, that's the longest I've ever been sober. 13 days. And then I got to 14 days. 2 weeks without a drink? Okay, I'm cured. Yeah. And I remember whenever I'd moved to North Carolina for that geographical change. And I heard the phrase, fake it till you make it. And I heard somebody share in the meeting that was in North Carolina one time that they were drinking the whole time even though they were picking up chips. And so I thought in my mind, well, I could do that too. I could just keep drinking, picking up chips, and people will think I'm sober. But the thing is you know when people are not sober. you know when people are still in that alcoholic thinking, when people are still, I didn't change. There was no difference in me. And so even my sponsor would be like, do you need to reset your sobriety date? And I'm like, how did you know? Well, for one, she could smell it on me. For two, you know, I wasn't actually working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was faking it. And I've come to really dislike that phrase, you know, fake it till you make it, because for me, it kept me out there for so long. But that was just the way I was hearing it. I was hearing that I'm not worthy. That's what I was hearing when I heard that. Fake it till you make it. I heard it's okay, because as long as I could pretend to be a good sober woman, then I was actually a good sober woman. And I thought that if I could just think that way for long enough, I would eventually become a good sober woman. And maybe it did. Maybe that's how it worked for me. But I've been taught that you have to act your way into right thinking, not think your way into right acting, because my thinking got me here. My best thinking landed me in hospitals. My best thinking landed me in jail. My best thinking lost my son. My best thinking lost everyone in my life that meant anything to me. So I had to stop thinking and I had to actually do the work. I had to come in here, go to meetings, not drink no matter what. And again, coming in here is what helped me realize that I could go one more day without a drink. You know, if I can just come here in the morning, that's why I love the Breakfast Club. Starts my day off right. Hear what I need to hear to carry that message throughout my day. Carry it to other people who need to hear it. And then, of course, too, you know, I had that thought that maybe the reason why I can't get sober is because I'm working in restaurants and I'm surrounded by alcohol. It's on the walls. It's, you know, I'm telling people it tastes great. Here, you really want this wine, you know, because it's expensive. And so I did. I tried getting, you know, a job at Cracker Barrel. You know, they don't serve alcohol there. You know, they tell me you're way overqualified. I'm like, no, I'm not. And of course, you know, I didn't want to. I would be honest with them and say, you know, I'm trying not to drink and I can't work in a restaurant that has alcohol in it. And they'd say, oh, well, we don't need you. Oh, okay. So I learned kind of early in my sobriety too, not to be too honest. Not everybody needs to know that I'm in the program. But the people who do need to know do know. And God obviously saw it fit to teach me that it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter where you work. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. If it's time to get sober, it's time to get sober. And you can do it no matter what. The big book says that we will find it, that if you don't have a purpose where you are, then you're there for the wrong reason. You know, so when I go to work, and I still work in a restaurant today, again, I'm in the midst of a career change, but I've stayed sober for 2 years surrounded by alcohol, with people drinking every day. And I realize now that God needed me to see what I was seeing in the restaurant, where I would see somebody literally fall asleep in their soup face first. That was me. When I would see somebody getting belligerent at the bar, that was me. When people were getting so loud and obnoxious, that was me. You know, and my coworkers would come in hungover and I'd have to pick up their slack. That was me. All these people I was seeing myself. I was seeing a reflection of who I was when I was drinking. And I was seeing who I could become by not drinking when I would come in here. So I would literally have both sides of the spectrum going, I think I'm going to gravitate to AA. And that's God's grace. That was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because I couldn't see that. I thought that all the servers who are making all this money, who were all drinking, partying, hanging out, this good old boys club, I needed to be a part of that. But that was killing me. You know? And it's so funny, because now that I'm on this side of the fence and I'm seeing it through sober eyes, I'm realizing that desperation that's in some of my coworkers when I see them just grab, 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 grab. And I'm like, that was me. And I'm so grateful I don't have to be that way today. I do have a few sober friends at work, and they're awesome people, because we can kind of go to each other and go, aren't you glad that today we get to be sober and we can enjoy the sunshine? We can enjoy life today. And it's not all about the money. It's not all about, you know, just that daily grind. You know, it's about stopping and appreciating the gift I've been given today. And, you know, I've had a few people come up to me and ask me you used to drink? Because now I'm around people now who've never seen me drink. And they're like, really? You don't drink at all? Why not? And I'm like, nah. If you don't get it, you don't get it. But at the same time, too, I've had people come up to me and ask me, how did you stop drinking? And I tell them about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tell them how it's changed my life. And I tell them that this is a program of action, that by putting steps behind these steps, I'm able to stay sober one day at a time. And I'm able to help others now to achieve sobriety, to pass along that message. And it feels good. It feels good knowing that someone else today doesn't have to live the way I was living. Now, I've yet to start sponsoring, but I feel that by just sharing, it helps others. I did again, in and out of the program, I have people who come up and ask me questions, and I'm open to answer them. I answer them openly and honestly. And, you know, seeds have been planted. But, you know, going back to today, though, I cannot tell you how grateful I am for my blessings, my first class problems. And to go from literally being in a gutter. You know, when I first came in, back in February of 2014, I had hit my head somehow, of course blacked out, and I had this horseshoe shaped some of y'all probably remember it. and part of me hoped it would scar, just so I would constantly have that reminder when I looked in the mirror. But, I think once God realized that, you know, I've got it this, or I don't want to say I've got it this time, because as soon as I say I've got it, I'm going to fall off. But, I think God realized that, you know, I have other reminders that I don't need to see a big scar in the mirror every morning. But I needed that at the beginning. I really did. And you know, people would ask me, how'd that happen? Well, I don't remember. Well, how do you not remember? I drank till I blacked out again. Again? Yep. And then they'd say, oh, really? Well, I do that too. Well, you don't have to. I know somewhere where you can go. To backtrack just a little bit, before I actually accepted AA and came to AA, I was going to see a therapist. And I thought that if I could just find out why I drank so much, you know, because I didn't want to accept the fact that the reason why I drank so much is because I was an alcoholic. It had to be some outside issue. And so I went to this doctor to ask him, you know, help me figure out why I drink so much so I won't drink so much. And he told me, well, for $5,000, $5,000, I will build you a network of people. And you'll have phone numbers, and you can call them, and y'all can lean on each other, and y'all can help each other stay sober one day at a time. And granted, this is only for $5,000. This is a sweet deal. And I'm looking, I'm like, guy, I've lost my, I'm on the verge of losing my job. I've lost my child. I'm about to lose my house because I can't pay my rent because, you know, of course, I'm spending it all somewhere else. He's like, well, do you have a car? I'm like, yes. Well, can you sell your car? Well, then how am I going to drive here? You know, so when I had nowhere else to turn because I didn't have $5,000, I came here and realized, wow, here's a network of people that I can call and lean on, and we can talk to each other about our daily problems, and we can get through one day at a time and stay sober. All for the grace of God. You know, if you have an extra dollar, throw it in the plate and it'll help pay rent and keep the lights on. It's amazing. And I'm extremely grateful for it. So thank you all for being here today. Thank you for helping me stay sober one day at a time.